In this week's episode, I am talking to a friend of mine from Instagram. His name is Daniel Zittler. He is a web developer, UI UX designer, and I will be talking about his why he started to learn programming and stuff. So I hope you enjoy this one. Hey man, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for reaching out to me. It's really a pleasure to finally talk to you.
Yeah, we are finally talking in hall, maybe. Yeah, before we just talk on Instagram chat.
Yeah. And so, that's how we met, basically.
Yeah, that's how we met. Through programming stuff on Instagram.
Yeah.
So, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure, I can do that. My name is Daniel. For the listeners who don't know me, I'm the host of the Tale of Man show, where you will probably hear the first part of this talk, because Julian is starting out a podcast and we said, let's collaborate. And yeah, for those who know me through the Tale of Man show, they basically know that I'm studying web development right now. And before that, I was was working as an art director. I did multiple cross-media projects, let's say that. Like, I did a lot of print stuff, for example, for Mercedes-Benz. And I did some digital stuff, like apps, website designs. And yeah, now I felt like getting into coding and getting into doing my bachelor's and figuring out where my journey is going. And then I started out doing an Instagram channel where I finally put out my stuff and my, let's call it, personal brand, like telling people what I'm about and why I'm doing it. So yeah, now we are here. Now we are talking, and it's really crazy how the journey went, because you're in Thailand, right?
Yeah, I'm in Indonesia, actually.
Okay, but you're there. I'm in Germany, and we are talking right now, recording a podcast. Yeah, so that's basically what I'm doing and what I'm about. And I like to talk a lot about values and attention in the digital space, and basically where we are going in digital space. And yeah, that's about me. But
that's a pretty long one. Because
for the listeners of the Tale of Mind show,
yeah, it's been
who
a long journey, man. Yeah, so now you're actually pursuing a degree in web development, right?
Yeah,
and
I'm doing.
Can you tell me why, or can you tell us why you started into web development? Because you were a designer and you start coding. Mm-hmm. Because it seems like a different stuff and a different world.
Yeah, I can explain it very vaguely, because it happened quite randomly. When I was still working in the agency, there was a lot of the times just trouble in communication between developers and designers, because when we were talking about like a pop-up, some people call it pop-up, some like to call it a modal box.
Yeah.
And now we're creating into apps, and then we call it like on Android different than on iOS, and nobody, or when we talk about React, we talk about components and we code in components. Do designers know how we code components, and do they design for components? And there are a lot of these issues happening, which always delay projects, which are costing basically time and thus money for the agency. And I felt like I wanted to solve that problem. So I just basically looked into HTML, CSS and tried it out, because coding back then, so 3 years ago, it was quite strange to me because it was just a random arbitrary amount of numbers and weird signs, and I didn't know if I could do it. And when I got into it, I had this strange feeling of creating stuff on my own, and you could basically create everything you want to. And when I was a little kid, I had the same feeling because I like to play with Lego, and I like to play outside because I grew up in a small town. So we built a lot of wood houses and stuff, and just played around with my friends. And we just built, we created things. And now that I got into code, I have basically the same feeling of I can create everything I want to. And thus, I could also create better digital products. So that's very vaguely why I started on an agency standpoint.
See, so because I feel the same, you know, because most of the designers out there don't even know how to code. So they just make some random things out there that we can't even code it.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, it's like, it's basically a dance, because when you're dancing with a partner, you need to know the steps of your partner in order to have a fluent, nice dance. And in design and development, for me, it's the same. Like, we developers are basically, like, it's like metaphoric speaking, we are dancing with coders are dancing with the developers. Yeah. And only if we speak the same language, we can have a fluent dance. And we are both listening to the same music. The music is always the best digital products we can provide to the end consumer. And that's missing right now. I feel like that's missing. So yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, but it sparks this question of should designers code and should coders design?
Yeah, I feel the same, because for me, it's the opposite. You know, for the first time, I learned coding. And yeah. I feel to be a better web developer, especially in the front end, I feel like I need to know at least a little bit of design. I don't have to be able to design, but at least I know how to place things so it doesn't mess up.
Yeah, for sure. I feel you. Yeah, for sure. I think it helps for both sides. If coders have a little sense or a little taste of what looks good and what looks right, it's enough. And also for designers, if they know like what's possible with code and how we interact with code is a good thing, especially now when we talk about React or component-based systems. So designer think in components and not in just this looks good and let's make this sick animation that's not being paid by anyone.
Yeah.
It's like, I have always, it's always the feeling I have when I go on Dribbble and look at this. It's always beautiful designs, but yeah. No one's going to code that.
Yeah, that's basically it. You just showcase all the cool animation and I don't know. I don't even know how to code it.
Yeah, sure. And it's like, yeah, but I think that's not a problem because it's eye candy. It's nice to look at, but it's not realistic. And sometimes it mirrors like it's like how it is in the space of coding and design. That's just things happen because the other person doesn't know how difficult it is to put it into code, for example.
Yeah. And I've seen your profile and I see you have worked with a lot of clients, amazing one. Like Mercedes-Benz, Volkswagen, Konami Digital Entertainment, and a lot of more clients. And which one gave you the most experience and why?
That's a hard one because I'm from Stuttgart and brand Mercedes-Benz is from Stuttgart. So a lot of agencies back in Stuttgart are working for Mercedes-Benz and it was one of our main clients back then. And thus I have the most experience, or I got the most learnings out of the projects I did there. And those were definitely the most exciting. And that's because, for example, I did a project for Mercedes where I art directed or directed the shooting we did for a car back then. And I did like Photoshop montages for it. And then, so it was basically an end-to-end work. I made the concept, I did the shooting, I did the post-production, and I designed or I lay out the brochure, which gets printed afterwards. And it was like this heavy project, which is always like, let's say, half a year to 1 year long. So you need to manage a lot of stuff and you need to look for models. You need to look for which products will be placed in the brochure, what's the concept. And those are the things which definitely threw me like how I said, into cold water and made me learn a lot of stuff. And it was fun. And in the end to have her, like it's different to digital when you have a printed product in your hands and you can say, I made this.
Yeah, that's very cool, man. Because it is hard to do everything by yourself, but in the end, it will teach you something very valuable.
Yeah, true. And that's like special about the agency I was, because we were a really small agency. We were like, let's say 15 people at max. And thus I had to do everything because we just hadn't had enough people who can do it. So it's a lot different. If you go to a bigger agency, then you always have a creative director, an art director, and designer, and like a tax person and this and that. And so many people are working on one project. So for me, it was really better to work at a smaller agency and learn more stuff and dive into more things, like taste more stuff I like. And then I filtered out the thing I like the most, which is digital, and digital led me to where I am now.
Yeah, I think it is very good to start with a small company, because when you have no experience, they gave you the most experience for me.
Yeah, for sure.
Because I used to do freelancing. So when I have a client projects and I don't even know how to make it, I just go ahead and say yes. And I learned it everything by myself, from designing even until deploying. It is a tough one, but at least I know most things after I started freelancing for about 6 months. So it is a fun experience to do.
Yeah, sure. That's entirely true. But I read your profile on LinkedIn and I saw you started out as an industrial engineer student, right?
Yeah, that's true.
And how did you end up in web development?
So it is a pretty long journey, because I used to love technology so much. And I always wanted to do programming stuff, but I ended up in industrial engineering because there are some complicated things. And in the end of my last year, I found Udemy, you know, that's an amazing website where you can learn basically everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just purchased one course, which is the HTML and CSS course, because why not? I have a lot of free time, so I can learn. And then after a couple of months, I think this is the right one, because I feel a lot of joy when doing it. And after a couple of months learning, I go out there and find clients. And the first client is basically one of my friends, and the pay is really low, but I do it for the portfolio. And the next couple of months, I research about coding bootcamp, because it is the shortest path to go into programming. And then I joined the bootcamp, and here I am as a web developer after 4 months being in a coding bootcamp.
But why did you go from industrial engineering student to web development in the first place? Like, did you feel stuck, or did you just didn't enjoy the study, or what made you watch out for different things?
Because I feel like I don't have the patience to do industrial engineering, and I am more of kind of tech guy, and I really love making products, and I really enjoy solving problems, which programming. In programming, there are a lot of problems to solve, and I really enjoyed it.
So you joined a bootcamp after that, and for people, maybe we should explain for people who are non-coders. I don't know if non-coders or designers are listening to that and can explain or know what a bootcamp is. So I'm trying to explain very vaguely, and you can interrupt me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, sure.
But a coding bootcamp is basically like studying, but very compressed. You have for like a curriculum, let's say you're learning 3 or 4 things like HTML, CSS, JavaScript, PHP in a short period of time. And this is why it's a bootcamp. You compress information in a short amount of time and you learn that in a, let's say, educational environment, like there's a, like a school, right? So did you go to a school or did you do it online?
I do it to, on a school, at a school, basically.
Okay. So, but that's a bootcamp, right? So
yeah, that's a bootcamp because it feels like the 4 years of college got compressed into 4 months of the bootcamp. That's basically it.
Okay. So how was your bootcamp structured? Did you learn from AM to PM every day, or did you have specific breaks, and where you learned at your own, or where you were with a mentor?
So basically the class start at around 8 to 9 PM every single day from Monday to Friday. And in the schedule, it is stated that we will end the class at 6 PM at night. But sometimes we stay up late to finish projects, and that's basically it from Monday to Friday. And sometimes I still code on the weekend because the assignment is too much for me.
What do you have an example for an assignment you need to do?
So the first month, we only learned the basic of JavaScript. That's basically a logical stuff. And on the second one, we learn backend. So we do some create, read, update, delete on the backend. And for the last 2 months, we learn front end. So one of the projects that we should build is an e-commerce website. So we built from the backend until the front end.
So how did, when you got the task, how would your regular day of a bootcamp look like? So you arrived there in the morning, and did you have lessons or did you have like open work time?
So we actually have 2 classes each day, sometimes 3. And the rest of it, we just code. The positive side of bootcamp is there are a lot of practical stuff. They put less theory and put a lot of practical stuff there.
That's great.
Yeah, that's the greatest thing.
When you had lessons then, how long were the lessons? Like 6 hours a day?
Or? The lesson will last only, the maximum is around 2.5 hours.
Okay. So it was also like practical lessons, or did you study theory there?
The first hour usually a theory and then go straight to live demo.
Okay, that's cool, because that's a similar approach than we do in my university.
Take the same approach?
Yeah, it's a similar approach. So not my university, I need to rewind it. The university I go to, we have like regular lectures, but it's also really practical. So it's not really a bootcamp because it's not condensed. It's like 2 years I'm studying. And we have, let's take for example, a lecture, which we do right now. We are now learning React and Node and client-server communication and so on. And there we have a lecture, like it's 2.5 hours long. It's Tuesday, Monday and Tuesday. And also we have lectures on Friday. But there is only, it's theoretical, but the tutor or the lecturer is coding with us a whole project from front end to back end. And there we learn by looking at his code, by writing code ourselves. And then we have like this mandatory assignments we need to do. And this is basically the large portion of our study is like coding ourselves and then hand in assignments. So was it the same like in yours, because you didn't have that much lectures, but more free time to do that assignment you need to do?
Yeah, basically we need to fulfill a certain kind of requirements for the projects, but most of the time they push us to do, to explore more on the topics for the assignment.
Because I think it's like a really good approach, and I talked to a friend of mine about it, and he goes to a regular university in Germany. He's studying informatics, and he always complains about that he's learning theory stuff like server architectures or like the theory of Java. And he's like, it's zero practical experience. And you all have to do it in your own time. And what do you think about it? Is it better to go practical or learn the theory? Because theory is also important.
For me, it is, you should get the balance of both of them, because coding is all about doing. So it will be very hard if you just learn the theory, but most of them are important. But if you don't even code, it is hard for you to understand everything.
Yeah, that's true.
And it is interesting that your college seems to have a similar approach to coding bootcamp, but here in my country, every single university seems like they are really old. They take an old approach for coding, so they don't even teach the student on the new tech. They just give the students everything that is old, which is kind of weird for me.
Yeah. And it's also hard to do a curriculum, for example, for web development, because it's evolving so fast. It's like the curriculum we are doing now in university, we could now add a Vue or, I don't know, some other new framework to it and just learn it, because it's like this hot new topic and it constantly needs to be updated, and constantly gets updated by the university, which is really good. But I'm also going to a private university. That means it's not bound to like to Germany, to the, I don't know the correct word for it now, but the other universities need to have a strict curriculum, which basically gets bound by the state. I don't know if that makes sense now, but what I wanted to say is that you did a coding bootcamp, but you also finished your university, right?
Yeah, I finished my university.
What would you recommend to someone who's maybe not really wanting to code, but wanting to learn or pursue his or her why or his or her career in something, but maybe is unsure about going to a coding bootcamp or going to university and maybe even going self-taught? What are your thoughts on that?
When I entered programming, I used to be a self-taught developer, and I got stuck in the middle because I don't know what else should I learn, or when I have questions, sometimes people on the internet doesn't even help me. So the first thing I love about coding bootcamp is you get a mentor. So when you are stuck, you can ask them, and a coding bootcamp curriculum will always be updated, so you can always count on the curriculum. But the downside of it is it is so expensive for just a short amount of time. But if you are you have a doubt on coding bootcamp, but I can make sure that it is worth the money, because you get a lot of value from it, from the short amount of time, and everything you get from them is really cool. For me, 4 years of college is too long. What do you think?
I was thinking about it too. It's a tough question. I would say it's because of my personal experience. I was always the guy who said studying is too long time for me. And this is why I did an apprenticeship as a media designer in the first place, and then immediately started to work as an art director, like I told you before. And then I was basically set, and then I was always like pursuing my career and didn't think about anything else. And then it came up to me that like, I want to study. And then I was in the same situations, like, what do I do? I tried learning it on my own, but I wasn't that eager to learn coding on my own, and I wanted to have a degree, like a bachelor's. So I was looking out for universities, and then I found my university, which is doing it in 2 years, like compresses all down, and that was fine for me. But now that I'm in it and I'm learning, I would also have no, like, it wouldn't hurt me if it would go longer, because it's such a great experience. So I would recommend to people that are figuring out what they like, who they are, and then make it up to that. Because if you like to learn on your own and you can set, or if you have discipline, then you can go to a boot camp, because I'm pretty sure that you will learn as much as possible from a boot camp. But maybe if you need some more time and want to figure out more or taste more stuff because you're not entirely sure what you like, then go for a university, because there you have more time to taste different things and dive into different topics. Boot camps are always like very strict. If you want to do web development, go to a boot camp, you will learn that. If you're in the university, it's more vaguely of a curriculum, and you can do more things on the side and still have time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Because there are a lot of free time in the university, so you can decide projects, or you can learn as many things as possible. Because in the bootcamp, usually your days are packed, even on the weekend, so you can do anything else besides coding.
Yeah, that's true. But the thing is, you have to do side projects when you're in university, otherwise you won't figure out anything. that's the thing I'm doing right now. I say I have 2 years of time and I want to use it in the best way possible. So I try a lot of stuff. I recently started with 3D in the web. I started I don't like to call it personal brand just because I put pictures on Instagram and do a podcast. But I started that and basically showing myself to the public, and thus we met and a lot of other people met. And this is really a great experience I have, just connecting to others, to like-minded people.
Yeah, I found a lot of great guys on Instagram when I first started posting myself out there. And it is amazing to know a lot of guys from out of my town, even out of my country, and they are all nice.
But how was it like to make your first post on Instagram? And the reason why I'm asking this is because I read your Medium article, and in there you met or you mentioned that you were afraid.
Yeah, I was scared because I don't know how people will respond to my post, because it is just a simple post of my first website, and I don't even know. And when I hit the post button, I just put my phone away. And I don't even care what people will say, because the hardest thing when you start is you worry too much about people's opinion. And that is the hardest part for me.
Would you have any tips for people who like to start something? Like, it could be a regular habit or just putting themselves out to public. What would you recommend to them?
When you put something out there, just go for it, because you don't even know how people respond. And sometimes people won't even notice the post because, you know, Instagram algorithm gets really weird for this couple of years. Mm. And for me, as long as you bring value to others, people will like you. And that's why I got a lot of friends, and there are a lot of nice people out there in the internet. And just don't worry about people's opinion too much. And when you want to start something, I suggest that you start it really small, because it is easier to start very small. And when you developed that habits, you will get, it will get easier when you start small.
True. Yeah, and you just mentioned value. How do you define value, for example, on Instagram? Because that's like one thing I never really understood, giving value, because the term value is so vague to me.
Yeah, I was posting a lot of coding picture because I did that 100 days of code. You did the same, right? Yeah,
I did. I started, but I failed.
Yeah, I failed too at day 82, maybe. It is really close.
What made you fail?
I moved to another place. So on that day, it was really busy. So I can't even code that day.
So will you do another 100 days of code challenge?
Maybe not, because it is busy right now at my current job, so I couldn't do anything like that before.
Okay. Yes,
talking about value, for me, when you bring value, is people don't get upset when they see your post. People will get motivated. People will get inspired. That is for me when you bring value to others.
That's a good point. And yeah, for me, it was just weird. I think the same, that value is basically when I take away something positive from swiping on Instagram, was just scrolling through Instagram. I don't know. But like, for me, it was like really repetitive, because let's take for example, and I don't know if we should go there to talk about the code community.
Yeah, I know what you mean, man.
But it gets really similar, and for me, it's basically just scraping for attention and getting the likes, and caring more about likes and comments than about the person who's consuming.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That's true. Yeah, because people this day really cares about likes, really care about engagement, and that is all they care about.
Yeah, and I think that's one reason that makes it so hard to start, because even now, large Instagram accounts I know, or people who have that accounts, think about that the sudden drop of likes or comments, that something is wrong with them.
Yeah.
And I imagine, like, when you're younger, let's say you're 15 years old, you want to start something because you're just, let's say, passionate about paper planes, and you want to do a paper plane Instagram channel, and no one cares. Like the amount of devaluing stuff, even though you think you put out value, it devalues it because you don't get the numbers.
When I first started, I used to do that, because I will count my post is successful is when it has hundreds of likes, but it keeps increasing, you know. And when it keeps increasing, you will never get satisfied by the amount of like you get on your post.
So how would you deal, or how do you deal nowadays? Let's say your post is really shitty, it doesn't get any likes. How would you deal with that? Do you have like, or what's your process of posting? Do you post a picture and then you stay on the platform and comment and stuff, or do you post and just leave your phone and don't care about it?
These days I just post it and I leave my phone away. And usually at night I will come back to my phone and I will read at the comment and I will reply to every single one of them. How about
that's
you?
A good thing to do. I very rarely post now. I don't actually know why. Maybe it's just because I got upset with the whole community thing, and I think it's slowly falling apart because everyone is just craving for attention and going the most extreme ways possible, and everyone wants to grow. And I talk to so many people who say they take breaks now just because, or they feel, or they post stories on Instagram and they say they feel upset for not posting today. And it's like, yeah, sorry, I didn't post today.
That's crazy.
For me, it gets in a really dangerous, on a really dangerous path, because when you feel upset that you didn't post one day in your life, I mean, something seems
it's
to
really,
be
yeah,
wrong.
It's really wrong.
So yeah, I talked to a lot of people there, and also people who say that they feel bad because the post went bad. And so I just thought, I engage with people that I usually engage, like for example with you or just friends from Hamburg I know here.
Yeah,
and that's about it. I just keep it like on a very personal level. And when I started, I tried to grow a lot. So I was posting daily, I was commenting, I was liking. And when I stopped doing that now, I really feel like it's, I have more time. Yeah. I'm maybe not spending the time I got now in the best possible way, but I got more time, and it's some sort of offline time, and I spend it more like reading and coding. So yeah, I maybe think about going back to posting when I feel like it, and when I feel like I have something to say, something to provide. Like when we do this podcast show now, I definitely want to make a post about it because I think it's going to be valuable for others. And especially hearing that and maybe reflecting, I hope someone reflects about their digital behavior a tiny little bit.
Yeah, on social media, because I think social media brings a lot of new things for us, but sometimes they bring a lot of negative side on it, because people just post and crave for like, and I don't even know what's the point of getting those likes now.
Yeah, true. That's I thought actually about doing an analog social media challenge. And the thing is, join one analog thing. For example, join a social fitness group, like a running club, or go to a meetup, or attend one talk per month, or create like a club yourself with a topic of your interest, but it needs to be analog. It needs to be offline. And I think that's really important, because we value our digital relationships so much that it really hurts us if it goes away. And I think we should zoom out of that social media behavior a little more and focus on the scope of the things that are around us. So,
yeah, that is why I rarely post these days. And when I post on my Instagram, it is usually when I publish my post on Medium, or maybe something that I feel like can bring value to others beside of just a laptop picture with a lot of code in it, which nobody even cares. No one even understands what I write on it.
Yeah, I definitely understand you, but yeah, it is how it is. But if you post, I'm really curious about your social media behavior, because I like to talk with people about it, especially about content creation. Do you pre-plan, or do you always know what to do, what to post, or is it hard for you to find another idea what to post a day? So do you think a lot about it, or do you just like document your journey you're doing?
At the first couple of months, I just document everything, I guess. And now I will plan it. For example, I will post a Medium post on Wednesday. I will usually take the picture on Tuesday and edit it on the night before. And I just post it next day when I already prepare all the captions. So it won't take a lot of time like it used to, because I think it shouldn't take that long to create a post. The longest time I spend is on editing, because I am pretty perfectionist when it comes to editing picture.
Yeah, that's true. And how do you edit your pictures, or how do you take your pictures? Because when I look at your feed, it looks so clean and it all fits together. I'm really jealous.
It is actually hard, because I move from place to place. Every place is a different environment, because when I was back in my hometown, all my walls are white and it gets a lot of sunlight inside the room, so it will be easier to take a picture on my hometown. And now I don't even know why my room walls is yellow. So okay. It is crazy just to edit one post when you take the post near the wall, because I need to edit the background just to make it a little white. I usually take the picture at the same time every time I take a picture, and I will use the same settings, the ISO and the speed. Everything will be the same, so I just hit my preset and it will just generate the same type of picture.
So, but which program do you use? Lightroom?
Yeah, I use Lightroom mainly.
Lightroom, okay.
Yeah, it is the best out there. Photoshop and is just too much to edit a picture. Do you think it is?
I'm going like really simple. I just use VSCoCam and edit my pictures like that.
Yeah, VSCo is really good, but sometimes when you export it, it will reduce a lot of
image quality. But what camera do you use? Because your pictures are looking so crisp.
I used to use a Canon 600D. It is 4 years old, and I only have one lens, which is the 50 millimeter 1.8. And on November last year, I chose to buy a new camera, which is the Sony A7 II.
Okay.
It has been really great for me, because my old camera, which is the 600D, produced a very bad image on very high ISO. And the Sony one, it still produced a good quality of image even on a high ISO. So do you usually take your picture with camera or your phone?
Usually with camera. It's funny, because I have the same setup. I have
You have the same camera.
I have the Canon EOS 600D, and I have the 50 millimeter lens and the kit lens, which comes with it.
That 50 millimeter is the best investment I have ever bought in my entire life. it is so cheap and produce the best. Not the best, but a great quality of image.
It's really decent, and I like the bokeh effects you can get with it.
Yeah.
So it's also really good in low light, and I'm really happy with it. And it was like $100 or something. So it's really a good deal.
Did you buy it when you have the camera, or you wait a couple of months until you buy it?
I first only used the kit lens.
Which is
really painful. And when I figured out how the camera works and how I need to photograph with it and what I wanted to do, then I switched. I just basically Googled what I want to do and then bought the best lens I could buy. And the most recommendations just were for the 50 millimeter lens. Like, I just watched YouTube tutorials and said, let's go for it. And then,
Since then, Peter McKinnon?
Yeah.
Yeah, even he recommends the lens a lot.
I think because of him, I bought the lens. Because he made a really funny video.
That's crazy.
It was actually really great. So, but why do you work that hard? Because you're doing Medium, or you're writing articles, you're posting on Instagram, or you're active on Instagram, you're working as a front-end dev or as a developer, and you did your boot camp. But what keeps you going?
For me, I really love to And I think it is fun to create content, but now when I create a post, it will take a lot of time because my job at my office is really busy. But what keeps me going is actually, I really love when people commented on my post and they say they are inspired. And that is why I keep going.
So you basically just want to inspire others?
Yeah, I want to inspire a lot of people and I want them to be the best version of themselves.
So that's basically when we say your why of why you're doing what you do.
Yeah, that is why I do what I do. And why can you still do side projects even though now you're working and you're really busy at your college, right?
Yeah.
What keeps you going then?
So that's a good question. For once, it's where I want to be. Like, that's a huge drive for me. That's why I'm figuring or trying out podcasts and stuff. Because I basically want to optimize for happiness. Like, happiness is sort of, let's say, my North Star. Because when I'm happy, other people can be happy. And I want other people to be happy. So that's what I want to do. I just want people to be happy. It's really simple because I imagine that it's a thought I had after two bottles of wine. So that means when I'm happy and I can make other people happy, let's say you're happy because we talked, then you're happy to your or you're nice to your friend, then your friend is happy. Then your friend is maybe married and he's happy and he's nice to his wife and brings flowers. So the wife is happy and then the kids are happy. The kids are nice in the kindergarten to the other kids and everyone is nice to each other. And when that happens, nowadays we call that world peace because everyone is nice to each other. All are behaving nice. And we just get along great with each other. And everyone does what he likes to do. And that's what I want to achieve. And that basically keeps me going to get myself also in a state of, let's say, pure happiness.
Yeah. I've read an article a day ago about happiness and success. Because in the article, it says that you're not happy because you're successful. But when you're happy, you can be successful.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I think the most successful people are also successful because they love what they do or they feel a sense of purpose in what they do. And if you feel a sense of purpose and if you can inspire others with what you do, it doesn't matter what it is, then you're already in a winning path. Then you only need to decide for yourself what success for you is, because success is different for everyone.
Yeah.
Success could be I have a family. Success could be I own $1 million. For me, success is I can work remotely. I can maybe in the future experience van life. I can travel. I can do the digital things I want. I can inspire people. I can talk to other people. That's what makes me happy. And when I retire, I want to buy a wood house at the lake. That's everything I want to do.
And stay there with your family?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be really cool.
That's when I retire, I want to have a wood house at the lake. Maybe in Canada or somewhere where it's nice.
Yeah, Canada is awesome.
Yeah, for sure.
Amazing country, because I watch a lot of Peter McKinnon vlog and he vlogs in Canada. The place looks really great.
Yeah, it looks really, really great.
But I think it will be really hot for me since there is no winter here in Indonesia.
The weather you're missing out then.
It's hot every single day.
Yeah, maybe it will be tough in the first time.
I haven't even felt snow here in Indonesia. There is no snow.
Well, then you should definitely experience some snow events sometime.
Yeah, I should.
So, but do you have any further or any future vision of your life, where you want to be or where you want to go?
I actually love doing my side projects, like freelancing on the side. And I think I'm that kind of guy that can work at the office, because it is really boring for me, because it is the same thing each and every day. And it takes a lot of time to work in office because it is mostly 9 to 5. It is a long one. And when I am older, I think I will mostly do freelance. I think I will be happier that way, because I can spend a lot of time on my side projects. I can spend a lot of time with my family. And I think that is where I want to be in the future.
That's a nice plan. I hope you achieve everything you want to do in the future.
Because for me in Indonesia, freelancing is really hard, you know. Because like people here in Indonesia pay small amount of money for a design, which is painful, because designing takes a lot of time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I completely understand you.
Yeah, it is so sad when I hear someone only get paid around $200 for a lot of design.
But do you think it's a negotiation thing, or is it like people just won't pay more? It doesn't matter how good you are.
Yeah, I think most people here just pay for the cheaper price, because people don't really appreciate services here in Indonesia.
But could you outsource your service, for example, on online platforms where you could get remote jobs, or just projects remotely from, let's say, from Germany or USA, or just from everywhere?
I think that is my plan for the near future, because I think people outside pays really good for this kind of service, web development and stuff. How is freelancing in Germany?
For me, it was quite easy, because I had a contact from my agency side, and I just did some stuff for friends of mine. So I'm not going to big into freelancing here and living off my freelancing stuff. I just do whatever comes by, and usually it's just through networking, and people say, hey, Daniel does some media stuff, just ask him. And then I talk to people, and usually if the project is cool, I don't care that much about the money. But I know from friends of mine that you can live off very well from freelancing here in Germany, at least.
Oh yeah, because it is kind of a passion project. Because when the project is fun, I think I will enjoy it a lot. But sometimes the projects are boring.
Yeah, I usually tend to not do projects that are boring, unless I really need money and I have to do it. But I'm actually right now in a pretty lucky state of my life that I don't need much money, because I'm studying. I'm living very cheap. I'm not buying any useless stuff. I just need food and my place to sleep, and that's not really much money. So yeah, I'm in the luxury of just doing the jobs I like to do. And
do you live alone?
I live in a shared flat, so we are 4 people here. Yeah, but everyone has his own room, of course.
I see. Where do your parents live?
They live in my hometown, Stuttgart. I live now in Hamburg, which is the northern part of Germany.
Is it that far?
Yeah, it's about, with the car, it's about 7 hours drive. So
that's really far.
That's far, yeah.
Do you often go back home?
That's on my bucket list this year. I planned out my year with the, I also made a podcast about it with the Tony Robbins rapid planning method. And there I laid out that I want to do more family stuff this year, because last year I was home two times, when I had birthday and on Christmas.
Yeah,
and it would be nice to have more family interaction.
Yeah, of course, because I also live out of town now. But the worst thing is, it is actually only 100 kilometers away. But because of the traffic, it will take almost 6 hours of drive.
Okay.
Yeah, because the traffic...
So it's basically the same as... that's hard.
Yeah, so I usually choose to take train, right?
Me? If I take the train? Sorry, the connection was bad for a second.
Oh, sorry. So that's me. I usually take the train to go back home.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. Nice. So... anything more to discuss?
I have another question.
Yeah.
How is your daily life looks like?
Very broadly speaking, I have my morning routine. I go to university till evening and then I sleep. it's really boring.
Your morning routine.
My morning routine usually consists of, I wake up now with my smartphone alarm clock again, because my normal alarm clock, the batteries don't have they're not working anymore. Let's just call it like that. Yeah. So my analog alarm clock isn't working, so I have to use my smartphone, which I really dislike. So it wakes me up. I'm getting out within 2 minutes. That's my limit I set for myself, because don't snooze in. It will make everything worse. And then I'm making my bed, because I'm going with the formula of Jocko Willink. He's a US Navy SEAL. He has also a fantastic podcast. Yeah. So he said that. I tried that. And the reason behind this is just to tick off small actions in the morning. So I'm making my bed. I'm getting out of bed. Usually I meditate right after that. Depends how awake I am. If I'm not that awake, I'm drinking a glass of water, because usually I'm just dehydrated in the morning. Then I meditate with Headspace for 20 minutes right now.
That's a pretty long time.
Yeah, it depends. So I started out meditating for 10 minutes, I think.
I see.
And then I just got up to 20 now. And I eventually want to do 1 hour in the morning, but then I have to get up really early and I still need to figure it out how I do it, because now I struggle with my morning routine at the moment, because after I meditated, or if I meditate, if I didn't sleep in, which happens a lot right now because it's cold outside and I didn't want to go out of my bed, especially today. And so, yeah, I still need to make it a really good habit in my morning and make it seamless. It's like a seamless transition into my day. But yeah, after meditation, it's just, eating, showering, going to university.
So I was trying to meditate. I was trying to put meditation in my morning routine, but I usually fail because my mind goes wild every single day. Do you have any tips on it?
on meditating.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would, if you start out, I would start out with a guided meditation. It doesn't matter which platform you use. You can use Headspace. You can use the app Calm. There are also a lot of podcasts which do guided meditation. For example, Sam Harris. And listen to Sam Harris for sure, because he has like really interesting episodes.
Yeah, he has the application now. It is called Wake Up by Sam Harris.
Yeah.
I think so. I use this one now.
That's a really good way to start. And then it's just practice, and don't get upset, and don't get or don't think you get enlightened just because you meditated two times in your life. Yeah, it's all just practice. And I would recommend practicing meditation to everyone, because it's such a good feeling, or it's good to know yourself, and it's good to know when you feel a certain emotion in your life. And just being able to, if someone is treating you badly, that you don't respond aggressively, rather to detach from that emotion and know why it's happening, what it's happening right now, and still react in the best possible way. Like, getting clarity about emotions is eventually what I wanted to say. And that's really the core thing why I'm practicing meditation, to be more.
The longest time I have done meditation is only for 5 minutes, which is really, really short.
Yeah, but you got to start somewhere. I mean, just practice for 5, then go in 3 weeks up to 10. It's just do it every day and make a habit out of it. And eventually you will get better at it. Like, everything in life.
Yeah, I hope so. And for the last thing is, where can we reach you?
You could reach me at my Instagram, which is at Tale of Mind. You can reach me at Daniel@taleofmind.com, which is my email. Or yeah, that's basically about it. Reach me at either my Instagram, Tale of Mind, or Daniel@taleofmind is my email.
Thank you for your time. It is really fun to talk to you in this podcast. And
yeah, thanks for having me on your show. It was really cool to talk to you, and it was like really easy going. We should do it sometime again.
Yeah, just to talk.
Yeah,
it's really cool, man.
Thanks.
So that is the end of this episode. I really hope that you enjoy it, and thank you for listening to the whole part of this podcast. And if you want to contact me or reach out to me or give any feedback, just hit me on Instagram. It's Julian C. Anderson, and see you guys on the next episode.